What's up, everybody? Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. That's right, you all get to access it. And this is the .net Countdown Show. I'm Will Pruitt. I'm joined today by Jake Barnett. And we will be counting down the top five and bottom three moments in wrestling this week. For our purposes, a week starts at the beginning of Impact and ends at the end of Raw. I know that is not an actual week. Please don't tell us that. This is just when we can record it during the week. But a good week this week. Money in the Bank was good. Impact is, I usually solid at this point in life. I'm still stunned. Both, you know, SmackDown had its moments, and then Raw was a really good show leading into the 1,000th episode. How are you feeling about wrestling in general this week, Jake?
I'm actually feeling pretty positive about it, to be honest. I mean, it's been last week was pretty rough in WWE, but this week was much better thus far, and I guess we still have SmackDown to go yet. But I mean, Impact is still trending up, and I think you know, Raw was pretty good heading into the 1,000th episode, and Money in the Bank pay per view you know, had good moments in the matches that were booked. I mean, it did have a lot of filler too, but I'm actually kind of impressed at the direction of both major companies right now. I think they could be on the cusp of some really good things. You know, hopefully they can avoid, you know, a lot of the pratfalls that generally creep in and take away from the show. But there's a lot of things to be you know, happy about on both the WWE and TNA side of things.
Absolutely, and I. For members, we're recording this a day late, partially because I went to the SmackDown tapings on Tuesday, where the most surprising thing happened. Sin Cara had a really good match. It was crazy. And the San Diego crowd was super into him. So on Superstars, if you get a chance to watch Sin Cara versus Drew McIntyre, it's worth going out of your way to see. Also, he had a good match with Not Hunico. That was nuts. I did not expect that to happen. So, watch Superstars this week, or next week, whenever the heck they're actually airing that match. So, we have a couple little bonus mentions here. Things that were good, but not quite good enough to make it into the top five, and both of them involve Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho versus Sheamus on SmackDown. Jake, you talked about it in the All Access SmackDown audio. Really solid match. When I heard that match announced, I didn't expect it to go long. And we got a long main event style match where Jericho put over Sheamus in a big way. I appreciated the storytelling. I appreciated the match, and I actually thought it was better than Sheamus versus Del Rio was on Sunday.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. I mean, it was a lot less paint by numbers than Sheamus and Del Rio felt. And you know, despite you know, I think Chris Shore pointed out that he felt it kind of built slow. I actually thought that. That, you know, the early part of the match set up a lot of what they did later on. It kind of felt similar to the division that we had, you know, editorially about CM Punk and Chris Jericho's match at WrestleMania. Kind of feels like, you know, he tries to have a little bit more, if you want to call it Japanese or old school build, you know, in his matches where, you know, they wait for the quick, fast-paced action until later on. I thought it paid off. I thought they had a few really good near falls out of the deal, and you know, we saw the best of both of these guys with Jericho putting Sheamus over cleanly at the end. It seems like he's one of the few main eventers that's still willing to do that stuff. So it's always nice to see, you know, one of the younger guys get a good push from a guy who's been around a long time.
Absolutely, and Jericho looks like he's going to be set to do it again because we got that Jericho and Dolph Ziggler segment on Raw that I really didn't expect, and I felt. Really, it was one of Ziggler's best promos to date. It reminded me of some of the work that he was doing earlier in the year. There was a promo with Mick Foley that Ziggler cut that was really good. And some others. Jericho and Ziggler put together some great stuff. And I've never seen Jericho hit the code breaker from just standing next to someone. And if there's a guy to sell that, it is Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, you know, it was actually an extremely entertaining segment. I thought Ziggler did a great job of pointing out, you know, some real truth about, you know, what Jericho's been doing since he got back. You know, he hasn't lived up to his own expectations or his own hype, and
And Edad Ziegler was very effective in pointing it out, and Jericho, you know, was able to do quite a bit with facial expressions, you know, without even saying anything. And I thought that, that helped the segment quite a bit. You know, if it weren't for Jericho's facial expressions in the Codebreaker, I'm not sure that promo would have had the same impact that it did. So I was happy with the segment overall, and I'm happy with the direction they're going with Ziggler, and I hope we see, you know, Jericho in a position to put him over at SummerSlam. It seems like they're going that direction, and I hope that's what we get to see.
Yeah, I think it seems like they're going towards Jericho Ziggler. There have also been rumors of Jericho Daniel Bryan, and while both of those sound absolutely fantastic to me just from a wrestling point of view. I feel like entertainment-wise, I'd almost rather watch Jericho Ziggler, and I love me some Daniel Bryan, but I think that Jericho and Dolph Ziggler could put together something very special match-wise, and that's something I don't remember a singles match between them, and maybe it's just slipping my mind, but I don't remember them ever having a real long singles match. One thing that we'll talk about as we get going through this, the SummerSlam card looks loaded. You know, if we kind of try and piece together where they're going at this point, that card looks it looks phenomenal as far as just a wrestling show. Let's get into the actual countdown proper now. Our number 5 best moment of the week, the Daniel Bryan and AJ proposal. Jake, I love me a wrestling wedding.
Yeah, it was it was unexpected, but at the same time, I mean, it seems like a logical progression of this story. You know, we're probably going to see the typical wrestling wedding where you're just not entirely certain how it's going to get ruined, but you're fairly certain that it will get ruined. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they'll throw us a curveball and they'll actually end up having a wedding next week. You never can tell, but it definitely seems like they're moving Brian and AJ away from the title scene so they can finish, you know, whatever storyline they still have left to tell with both of them, and I think that's the best for both of them at this point. Brian doesn't need to take any more losses to CM Punk if they don't plan on putting the belt on him right now, and I think there's still a lot of interesting stuff they can pull out of him and AJ. So I'm actually looking forward to this wedding quite a bit, and I thought the Raw segment was just campy enough to make it kind of funny and lighthearted heading into next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt like this, it was campy, it was silly. Do you think, it seemed like they may have been turning Daniel Bryan babyface here, and I know a lot of people will debate about that, and maybe it was just a ploy going into the wedding, and that's going to set up the wedding being ruined somehow, but do you feel like this was a Daniel Bryan babyface turn, and if it was, do you think that's the best choice?
Well, I think they've been fighting off the Bryan babyface turn ever since he started doing getting the yes chance. It seems like the crowds really do want to cheer him anyway. So I don't think it's a bad idea to turn him face. I mean, I think, you know, they do have, some interesting heels that are moving up the card that he could feud with. That would be a lot of fun to see. So I think that's what we're seeing here. You know, I think they're setting up, his heart to be broken or something like that, and to get the sympathetic baby-faced turn, and hopefully that means him, him taking on some of these up-and-coming heels that are kind of moving up the roster. You know, they have Damian Sandow, and they have Claudio, moving up, and they also have Ziggler and everybody else who's kind of in the position to to be a heel towards the middle or top of the card. So I think there's a lot more interesting things for Bryan to do now as a babyface than there would have been 6 months ago or so.
Yeah, there's kind of a babyface shortage in WWE as far as, you know, your main event babyface guys. And I think Bryan could fill that role nicely. I mean, you do have Cena. You do have Punk. You have Orton returning in a couple weeks. Mysterio's there. I talk about a shortage, then I list like 7 babyfaces. Way to make your point, Will. And way to refer to yourself in the third person, best in the world. But I feel like Bryan can still fit in that mix, and WWE has so many great heels at this moment that Bryan could play off of them very well. If they're going to pair them together, if the end result is Bryan and AJ married, whatever it is, I think you go with them as a babyface couple and not a conniving heel couple. Don't get me wrong, though. AJ still has to be crazy. That's essential.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they're, they can really just kind of tone down the crazy and say it was, you know, temporary insanity or something. It seems like it's too interesting for them to just walk away from. So I hope they're able to come up with some good ideas for her, too. You know, after they get to the wedding, you know, the female characters seem to kind of drift away. So I hope they're able to keep her engaged because she really has been one of the most entertaining things on WWE TV in quite some time.
What's your prediction for the actual wedding ceremony?
I'm assuming we're going to see, you know, the typical blown up wedding at the end. I'm not sure who's going to interfere. I'd like it to be, you know, somebody that AJ was secretly seeing behind the scenes. You know, whether, you know, somebody on the forums, I think, mentioned that The Miz would be a pretty good possibility because he and AJ kind of locked eyes at some point during their match on Monday. And, I think that's a good choice. Otherwise, any of these other young, you know, heels that are kind of coming up that need that need the push, that need a feud against somebody, you know, with the credibility that Brian has. So I see them starting a whole new direction for both Brian and AJ next week, and I hope that, that we're going to get Brian ended up brokenhearted and had, you know, trying to get his revenge against the new cocky heel that AJ's dating, because that seems to be the most interesting story to come out of this.
I actually kind of disagree. I would like to see Brian and AJ stay together. Brian, you know, and Brian out for vengeance, sheerly for, you know, ruining the wedding ceremony and making, you know, his new crazy-ass bride cry. But that's, you know, either way, I think we do see Brian going into a rivalry with some sort of heel, and I think Miz is a good choice. I know a lot of people are saying they'd love to see Dean Ambrose, the former Jon Moxley, debut in this role, but something tells me that I don't think they'll go with the debuting ex-boyfriend more than the, hey, this guy that's already on the roster has this for you. But if this leads to, say, Miz versus Bryan at SummerSlam, hey, that's a damn good match that I don't think we've seen since 2010. So I could get behind that.
Yeah, I could too. I mean, however it ends up, whatever configuration the feud ends up, we know we can get really good matches out of Brian and Miz. So if that's the, that seems to be the obvious direction. So, and they do want to, get some, get something out of Miz, on his way back, up the ladder. So I'm hoping we're going to see, both of these guys stick around the main event scene, and having them feud together, away from the title is probably a good place to start.
Do you think Miz will claim that his beard is better than Daniel Bryan's?
I'm not sure, but he does have a very different look, upon his return, which is a good thing.
I think Miz's look quite a bit.
Yeah, I think he definitely looks different enough that it feels fresh. You know, it doesn't feel like the same Miz that came back, and I think that that will help him, in the long run.
I remember saying before Miz left for his Marine filming hiatus that it looked like his hair was slowly going from the understated faux hawk to the full-on, like, Miz and Morrison-era faux hawk. Like, that thing was getting larger and larger by the day. And now, with the slick-back hair, the little bit of almost beard, I like what Miz is doing right now. I think that it fits his character a little bit better. Moving on, number four best moment of the week, Bully Ray versus Joseph Park opening Impact. I liked this match for the same reason that I liked their match at Slammiversary, and I really liked the twist at the end. It surprised me that I liked it, but with Joseph Park bleeding and suddenly becoming a monster and wondering what happened. Good storytelling, a good match, and an entertaining segment all around.
Yeah, they managed to keep this pretty fresh. The twist was good, and I actually like that they opened Impact with a match rather than having a a verbose opening segment. I think it got the show off to a different start, or a different kind of start with a different feel. And I think Bully Ray, you know, and Park both continue to be some of the more interesting characters that TNA has produced, you know, in 2012. So I'm happy to see, you know, this story, you know, kind of continue to evolve, and both of these guys, you know, kind of come into their own in these characters. I think Park has been especially surprising. You know, you almost expected Bully to be this good just because of how, you know, phenomenal he was on the mic, even in ECW years ago. You know, this seems like a character tailor made for him, but Park has been surprisingly good, and I liked, the twist at the end with the blood and Park's confusion. I think it adds another, layer to this that, you know, that we didn't expect. So this is one of the better TNA stories, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that this new creative team has built up some confidence with me, where I'm willing to sit back and go, all right, pay it off well. But I have faith that you can pay this off well, TNA, and I hope you can. Yes, this creative team does have the Claire Lynch blemish on them, but the rest of the show has been so good that I'm really willing to forgive that and trust that they're going to pay this off the way that it should be.
Yeah, exactly. And that's you know, that's a huge boost for TNA, because I mean, it wasn't very long ago that nobody had any confidence in them being able to pay off anything. So the fact that they're, you know, they built up enough goodwill for us to sit back and just see how the story gets told is a much improved show, and I think, you know, it speaks volumes about the direction they're heading. It does seem like they have a competent booking team now that at least has, you know, some long term direction in the works, and I wish we'd see more of that from WWE from time to time.
Yeah. And the thing about Impact that's really great is it feels like no matter what part of the show you're watching, you're seeing the next chapter of a story. There is a story for everyone on that roster at this moment, whether it's a little thing where Madison Rayne is making out with Earl Hebner for no reason, or it's a major thing like the Aces and Eights story, or even Claire Lynch, which is happening. Everyone is involved in a story of some sort. It's not mid-carders thrown out there with no reason to fight. And that's something that I think we criticize WWE for, and justifiably so.
Yeah, exactly. And if, you know, that's one thing WWE did well when, you know, when they were competing against WCW, was making sure that people all the way up and down the card actually had something to do and had a meaningful story. And I think it's one of the hallmarks of you know, of a show that's on the rise, is when, you know, is when all the gears are moving, instead of, you know, just having, you know, people at the top getting storylines and the rest of the card just kind of feeding off their scraps. I think this is a model that, you know, that can work and can lead to long-term success for them.
Exactly. Let's talk about our number three best moment of the week. Big Show versus CM Punk on Monday Night Raw, and the Cena Money in the Bank angle afterwards. I thought that this was probably Big Show's best singles match in a few years. He looked dominant, he looked impressive, but he was still able to sell and give enough to Punk to where Punk looked, to where you left that match going, Punk is a fighter, man. That guy, he will do what it takes. In a way, Punk got over even though he was selling for a great part of the match, because he just looked so damn scrappy.
Yeah, I mean, this was, you know, the model for how they should plan, you know, Big Show's matches against smaller opponents. I mean, the way it played out really kind of capitalized on the, you know, on the skill sets of both guys, and it was a pretty good match. I was enjoying it, you know, up until the point where we had the finish. So it was, you know, it was one of the better matches we've seen from Big Show. I mean, you know, Punk had obviously just had a phenomenal match with Brian the night before, but this was a really fun TV main event, and I thought they managed to do some interesting things, you know, between the two of them. The way Punk kind of sold surprise when he was actually having effective offense was fun, and the Cena announcement afterwards, you know, I didn't expect him to be the guy to cash in and get a surprise victory, so you know, it's fine that they're going to have it on the 1,000th episode of Raw. It seems like you know, something that they, you know, they want to heavily advertise, you know, more than a week in advance. But I understand the kind of buying they were in with Money in the Bank being on the calendar when it was. So I'm looking forward to the Cena Punk match. I think they're going to do, you know, some really interesting stuff, and both of them are supremely talented. And I see they're lobbying for Jim Ross to call the match on Twitter. So I'm pumped about the, you know, the possibility of that stuff too. So next week should be a lot of fun.
That's true. If there's one thing in the, two Cena Punk matches last year that I think we all wanted at Money in the Bank and SummerSlam, everyone wanted Jim Ross to call those things. And Jim Ross didn't. It was Michael Cole. And I will say one of the best calls of Michael Cole's career, I still think, is Money in the Bank 2011. And that match, he did a damn good job there. But he's no Jim Ross. And he did a slightly worse job at SummerSlam 2011. I really hope we get Jim Ross calling it. I loved the Big Show promo after the match. WWE has gone out of their way to talk about, you know, how it's an opportunistic thing. It's not the worst thing someone can do to cash in the Money in the Bank the way that John Cena could have on Monday night. And I love what Big Show did, really making sure that you understood this is a heelish thing to do. And the entire time reinforcing that, Show had some good mic work. I just feel like Show's performance on Monday night all around was great. John Cena deciding to cash it in on the 1000th Raw. Do you think that's a good main event for the show, or do you feel like it's a little bit of a, or is it, you know, a little too soon to go back to that feud? And how do you think the match ends?
I don't think it's too soon to go back to the feud. I am surprised that they booked it for the 1000th Raw, just because that show was already so loaded. It almost seemed, like they would have to, I guess they are pushing some of it to the YouTube pre-show, so maybe they already are recognizing that they have too much booked for that show. But I just hope they're able to give it the time, that it really deserves, because I think both of these guys, in their previous two matches showed us that they really can do something special when given the right amount of time and the right amount of creative energy. And we know that, you know, both of them, can tell a good story in the ring when given, the time and the opportunity. So I'm fully expecting this to end in some kind of schmoz. You know, I'm expecting a very good match that ends kind of, in a cluster like any other main event would. I'm expecting the Big Show to be involved, possibly, you know, The Rock, if they want to set up something for SummerSlam, if he's going to make an appearance there. He did tweet, The Rock did, that he's setting his sights on the WWE Championship starting next Monday. So we'll have to see, you know, how many factors there are to figure in. But I'm assuming this is going to end with Punk retaining and setting up some kind of multiple-person match for the title at SummerSlam.
Now, you talked about Raw 1000 being loaded, and it is, but out of, I think, the six things advertised, one of them is a match. You've got, you know, the Lesnar Triple H segment, you've got The Rock hanging out, you've got a new general manager, the wedding, and something else. But only one segment, only one of these six things advertised is a match, and that is the match with Punk and Cena. So I understand them going for it on the 1000th Raw instead of SummerSlam. And, all indications are Vince McMahon is basically saying, let's make this the biggest show ever. You know, let's make this the biggest Monday Night Raw we've ever had. And I think they kind of set it up to be that, and that main event put it over the top for me. It will be interesting to see. You've got Big Show hanging around in the picture with Cena and Punk right now. Daniel Bryan was just there, and I don't think he'll interfere, but I felt like his name was worth mentioning. And you've got The Rock there setting his sights on the WWE Championship. That's a whole lot to, you know, there are a lot of toys to play with in that championship scene. And there's a lot that those guys could do. If it ends in a schmoz, what does that do to the Money in the Bank briefcase? Well, does that mean that Cena is the first unsuccessful cash-in?
You know, I'm not entirely sure how it's worked before. I mean, have we ever seen a DQ on a cash-in attempt? I mean, did they?
Nope.
I want to say it happened to, maybe it didn't happen to Swagger.
No, Swagger. Swagger ran down after Chris Jericho got beat up by Edge on the SmackDown after WrestleMania 26 and hit like the gut wrench power bomb and got the finish. the only guy, most of the matches, none of them have been no DQ matches, except for Rob Van Dam versus John Cena at One Night Stand 2006. We've never seen a situation where disqualification was put in play, like where it's actually been, you know, hey, this guy is about to get disqualified or any of that. It could be an interesting, you know, it could be an interesting night with that Money in the Bank briefcase and to see where it goes. I feel like ending a Money in the Bank cash-in on a disqualification is probably a bit of a cop-out.
Well, I'm just wondering if they'll have Cena win by disqualification and then they'll hand him the briefcase back. You know what I mean? Like
that's interesting. That's
like he'll win via DQ, and because he won and wasn't given the title, they could just, you know, say he gets another chance with it or something.
Especially if he does technically win the match, I feel like that would make sense. Actually, is to say, hey, you know, have the new authority figure, maybe you, Jake Barnett, on tout, say, yeah, you're gonna tout. You know you are. Have you go, you know, John Cena, you get that briefcase back, son. Just think of how the crowd's going to pop when you tap that.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an interesting twist, and, you know, it would make sense. It might allow him to insert himself into the, you know, the SummerSlam main event if, you know, if they book somebody else in that spot, whether it's Big Show or you know, maybe they book... you know, Punk versus The Rock, and then Cena adds himself to the match with the briefcase, so we get a triple threat. That would be a really good main event for that show, too. So, I know, it seems like they're, you know, if The Rock is coming back for a match at SummerSlam, which has been kind of hinted around, that would seem to be, you know, the most money they could draw out of that would be, you know, Cena, Punk, and The Rock in the title match.
Do you feel like Rock is best used in a triple threat match? My feeling, at least my personal feeling, is you actually just go, you know, you win the CM Punk title reign, as much as, you know, I think a lot of internet fans are now throwing down their cell phones and computers in anger at me. You win the Punk title reign on Monday, John Cena wins. You know, you mentioned in the build-up to the match, hey, John Cena hasn't beat CM Punk in a one-on-one match. Punk is 2-0 in high-profile one-on-one matches against Cena. I know they had a Raw match or something. That's why I throw in high profile. And then at the end of the, you know, and by the way, I think we get like a 25-minute overrun on Monday night. So settle in for 3 hours and 25 minutes of goodness. But then I believe if you're going to go with Rock having a match, I think you make it Cena Rock 2. As much as that feels like too soon to me, if he's willing, I think you go Cena Rock 2 at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I don't know what direction they're going with The Rock for WrestleMania, so you know, that may factor in. The only reason I wouldn't normally say a triple threat with The Rock is a good idea, just because he's, you know, he can carry a match by himself without any kind of problem. But when you have, you know, people on the level of Punk and Cena, you know, that are going to be sharing the spotlight with him, you know, I think it just makes it that much bigger of a match. But you know, if they want to get the title on Cena, you know, without having him pin Punk, or, you know, however they want this to go down, you know, giving an opportunity for, you know, having an opportunistic finish in that match that, you know, allows them to keep all three guys strong and maybe have Cena get his win back over The Rock. You know, maybe Punk hits the GTS and Cena throws him out of the ring and makes the cover, or you know, however they do those three-way finishes. You know, they seem to all kind of finish in a similar way. They can keep heat on everybody in the match and change the title if they do want to have you know, Cena heading into the fall with the WWE title that way.
That's true. And you know, there's something to be said for getting Punk a little bit of that Rock rub. And personally, I would love to see The Rock compete at SummerSlam, mostly because I have tickets and I won't get to see The Rock live, I don't think, unless he's at the Rumble. But I still don't see him working the Rumble match. So, yeah, I would really like to see The Rock at SummerSlam. That would be sweet. As, you know, the Mark-ish wrestling fan that I can be sometimes, and that Jason makes fun of me for being. A lot. Jerk. Jason Powell's a jerk, guys. That's pretty much a fact. And did you see in one shots yesterday that Chris Shore called me a nerd?
Yeah, it happens. You know, it's part of the rivalry of being on a wrestling site, I guess. You
I'm
just
being
gotta,
picked on by
gotta take the barbs when they come and dish them out when you can.
It hurts my feeling parts. Moving on, number two moment of the week. Both Money in the Bank matches. We threw them all in there, and we were talking before we went on the air, and I said to you, Jake, if you put the good parts of both of these together, you'd have a perfect Money in the Bank match. But when you take them separately, they both had something missing. And for me in the SmackDown one, it had the athleticism, but it just felt botchier than it is most years. It felt like some of the convoluted spots they were going for, they didn't quite get. And the even the simple ones somehow became not so simple, like Tensai trying to do to powerbomb, I think it was Santino off the ladder, and messing that up, or Ziggler messing up the move off the top rope with Sin Cara. Those things kind of hurt it for me. And in the Raw match, you had the drama, you had the storytelling, you had a lot of fun stuff in play, but you didn't quite have the athleticism and the risk-taking that you expect from Money in the Bank. It wasn't the, oh, you know, you never really screamed, oh my god, I can't believe that, the way that you hope to at least a couple times in a Money in the Bank match. So I feel like tying them, to you know, putting them together as the number two moment of the week was the best choice.
You know, yeah, Money in the Bank is always a spectacle, and the SmackDown match, while, like you mentioned, it was, you know, huge spots and super fast-paced, and, you know, they had a lot of very dangerous-looking moments. It didn't seem to carry, you know, the same type of drama that the Raw match did. And, you know, I spent most of the SmackDown match just, like, cringing, like, oh, my, like, oh, jeez, that was so unnecessary.
Or, yeah.
You know, especially the botches where you're just hoping that somebody's career isn't going to end when some of that stuff happens. It's just, you know, I don't know if there's a way to you know, to kind of merge these two match types together where, you know, they do take some risk, but, you know, but they do focus on telling a story at the same time. I mean, it's tough because the level of experience in the, you know, with the WWE main event style, you know, varies from competitor to competitor when they're throwing these matches together. But in the future, you kind of hope they're able to blend these two match types successfully, because the Raw match felt a little bit too slow for Money in the Bank, and the SmackDown one almost felt like they could have turned it down a notch and took a little bit more time and told a better story. But we'll have to see, you know, how this happens in the future, whether Money in the Bank is a permanent fixture or how they're going to deal with it in the future. But I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, six or eight competitors get in there and actually tell a story while giving us some of those crazy spots.
And I feel like Money in the Bank has done that before. There have been Money in the Bank matches that have told a better story and still delivered the craziness. It just didn't happen this year. And it almost felt like they said, well, you're the storytelling match, you're the action match, go. Which is fine. Breaking down some of the stuff in the actual matches, the end of the Raw Money in the Bank match has been talked about a lot as, you know, a possible botch, a possibotch, if you want to combine those words like I do. You know, a possible botch, what happened, and that, you know, that seemed, hey, the handle broke, but it broke right before John Cena was going to take it anyways, so such is life. That was fortunate that it didn't happen when Jericho was up there. Or anything, and not that Jericho, by the way, if you if you didn't see the match and just heard Jericho was hanging from the briefcase, he was hanging from the chain, and the handle of the briefcase broke, so Jericho was still absolutely secure.
Yeah, he definitely took a really crazy risk there. I mean, that could have ended really poorly for him. But, I mean, overall, I mean, I don't know if that briefcase spot at the end was the intended finish or not, but I think it worked anyway. I don't think it changed the outcome of the match. I think it was pretty clear Cena was going to be the winner there. But, yeah, it was kind of interesting to watch the look on Cena's face when he was holding the briefcase, and you kind of felt like, well, that wasn't supposed to happen. But it was good anyway. I mean, it wasn't a bad match, and I don't think that kind of unintended finish ruined it. But you definitely like you said at the beginning, and you know, in the future we hope we see a nice blend of these two.
Yeah. Moving on, I mean, you know, Ziggler, really we should mention Ziggler's win. How do you feel about Ziggler with a briefcase, and do you think that he was the best guy to win that match?
Yeah, I you know, as soon as he entered it, he was my, you know, the favorite. I mean, he's, you know, one of the more gifted in-ring performers. He's really starting to come into his own on the microphone, like we said earlier in his promo with Jericho, and it just seemed like he was the guy most ready to make the leap to the next level, and I'm looking forward to seeing him with the world title eventually. I don't expect him to be the one that actually loses the briefcase match. I think he's the kind of opportunist that'll make it interesting, and I look forward to seeing him feud with some baby faces, especially Daniel Bryan if they move him into the babyface category, because I think those two have torn it down in the past and could give us a really special World Heavyweight Championship match.
Yeah, I want to say those two, it was at, like, Bragging Rights or something in 2010, a throwaway pay-per-view. They had a Match of the Year candidate as, I think it was maybe even the opener of that show, that was just phenomenal. And I think Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler have only improved his workers since then. So, and you know, I should say, you know, Daniel Bryan did need to improve as a worker. Maybe I should say have improved as storytellers in the ring on that front. And it could be amazing to watch those two go at it, especially, you know, in a more main event scenario instead of an opening match type of situation. Let's move on now. While we're talking about Daniel Bryan, number one best moment of the week, Daniel Bryan versus CM Punk with AJ as the special referee at Money in the Bank. What is there to say? This match, it had a lot of storytelling. It, you know, especially the latter half. It seemed like they got AJ out of there for the middle of the match to just let those dudes do what they do wrestling-wise, and then brought her back to let them do what, you know, they've been doing storytelling-wise. Everything worked together. The match seemed seamless. Bryan and Punk are two of the best in the world, and they showed it with this.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, it was a near 30-minute match. You know, it's exactly what you hope for when you think of a WWE title match and, you know, in a main event on a pay-per-view. I mean, people have made a big deal out of this not going on last. I don't think it mattered. If anything, you know, the main event Money in the Bank match might have suffered by trying to follow this. I mean, this was you know, just a fantastic match. You know, two brilliant professional wrestlers, you know, doing what they do, and AJ adding quite a bit, you know, despite her doing the unexpected and kind of calling the match somewhat down the middle. You know, I think they did the right thing by letting the wrestling tell the story here, and I think Bryan and Punk deserve, you know, kudos for putting on a fantastic match. There's been quite a bit of discussion, I guess, on our forums and, you know, probably on Twitter and other places across the web. I think Chris Shore said this was the match of the year thus far. You know, he thought it was better than The Undertaker and Triple H at WrestleMania. I'm not sure if I want to go that far. I mean, there's a lot playing into that story heading into the WrestleMania match between Taker and Triple H, but you know, from a drama perspective, that match was probably better. But, I mean, it's hard to pick a match anywhere that I've seen this year that was technically a better match than this one. I mean, this was just a magnificently wrestled thing.
I liked Bryan and Punk's Over the Limit match better than I liked this one. I don't know exactly what it was, and I'm sure I'll get an angry email from someone. But I actually preferred their match at Over the Limit to this one, and I thought they were both great. I mean, if I'm sitting down today to make my top 10 matches of the year list, they're both on it, probably in the top 5. I don't think either of their matches were as good as Triple H versus Undertaker, but I have a special affinity for the streak. By the way, if you're watching that streak DVD and you're not reading my streak series blogs with it, shame on you. Cheap plug for the blog series that went longer than my master's thesis. Dear God. Seriously, I wrote a blog series longer than my master's thesis, Jake. I hate myself.
Impressive.
But, yeah, at the same time that I was writing my thesis. But I just don't feel like any match this year has been as good as that Undertaker-Triple H match. And I find it kind of interesting when, you know, the internet wrestling community is always like, we love a pure technical wrestling match. That's what we want to see. None of those, you know, special little frills on it. The two matches that are being talked about the most right now in the match of the year conversation have both involved special guest referees as, you know, main storytelling devices that didn't fade into the background, but were involved in, major points of the match. And I just find that really interesting from a, you know, someone that watches a lot of wrestling and someone that is involved in a lot of discussions that, it, you know, people who say we love pure wrestling more than anything else, man, they love their special referees in 2012.
Well, I don't know if it's, I mean, there was a lot of the, you know, a lot of story elements building into WrestleMania. And if you're a fan of drama, you know, then you probably would prefer The Undertaker, Triple H, and Michaels. I mean, what they managed to accomplish telling that story over multiple years.
Yeah.
You know, finally leading to the conclusion at WrestleMania. I mean, if you had been a longtime WWE fan, it's hard, you know, to think of a bigger moment than that one. I mean, you know, just from the terms of long-term storytelling, I mean, it's a pretty rare occasion what we saw at WrestleMania. So, you know, you have to keep that in mind. But from a pure, you know, just entertainment perspective of somebody, if you were sitting down fresh, green, you know, you hadn't been paying attention to storylines for a few months and you turned on television, you know, for those two matches, I'm not sure which one you'd pick. I think they both did a pretty excellent job of telling a story in the ring, too. So, yeah, I guess it depends on your criteria and what you're more, you know, emotionally invested in as to which one you'd pick. I mean, I think Brian and Punk probably wrestled a better technical match, but I mean, if you're a huge fan of what's been going on between Taker and Michaels and Triple H for the last 4 years, then, you know, it seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, and for me, you know, you mentioned the drama and everything. For me, what it comes down to is when wrestling manages to transcend kind of what it is and bring catharsis with it, I'm impressed and I'm amazed. And I feel like the entire Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, and Triple H series has been a cathartic experience that wrestling rarely gets the opportunity to provide. Those have been, you know, those are works of art that I would put up there, even to a non-wrestling fan that hasn't watched a ton of it. I would put up there with, you know, a lot of movies and stuff and say, you should watch this because this is a work, you know, this is something that will make you feel something if you sit down and give it a shot. And, it, you know, Daniel Bryan versus Punk was exciting and fun and a great match, but I just don't feel like it reached that level for me. But we can have this discussion again in, what do you say, about 5-6 months when we do our best of the year countdown?
Yeah, I mean, we can dig into this, and who knows what we'll see between now and the end of the year, too. I mean, it could be, you know, we could see another Punk and Bryan match, or maybe we'll see, you know, a Ziggler and Punk or a Ziggler and Bryan. I mean, you know, there's a lot of really great workers in the WWE right now, so, you know, at any point on a pay-per-view, if you put them in the right place at the right time, you know, then we could see something magical happen. So I don't think the best of the year has even been determined yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's move on now to some of the worst of the week, and this was a hard list to put together, too. It's just three items, but wrestling rocked this week. Number three worst, and for me it's even a minor worst, because I didn't think it was terrible, but I thought it was semi-bad. Bobby Roode stammering, finally managing to get the word fluke out and all that. Just an odd segment where I saw where they were going, but I don't feel like they got there effectively.
Yeah, I thought it was more, you know, delivery than anything else. I'm not sure if it came across like Roode intended. You know, I think he was going for a combination of, you know, of a guy whose confidence was shaken and perhaps frustrated. You know, I'm not sure how it was supposed to come off, but I thought Aries was great, and I thought Rude, just for whatever reason, had an off night and didn't hold up his end of the deal. It just didn't feel like the same Bobby Rude we've been used to. And maybe that was the goal. I mean, maybe it was just to, you know, to show Rude in a position that he's not used to being in after being champion for 8 months. You never know. It's hard to say, but it wasn't one of his best performances. And you know, hopefully he gets back on track very quickly. You know, you wouldn't want to see a couple of bad performances in a row to sour somebody on him in the back or something.
Yeah. How do you feel about the fact that we're getting Rude versus Aries in a non-title match this week on Impact? And then, well, tonight on Impact, actually, unless you have DirecTV. And then we're getting the title rematch between them on... I have words in my mouth, and they are going to come out of it at some point. Sorry, folks. And then we're getting the championship rematch between them at Hardcore Justice. How do you feel about that kind of oddness?
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of summed it up. It's just kind of odd. I don't know why you give away another match on television prior to their pay-per-view rematch. You would think they could accomplish more, you know, verbally than they would be able to in another match. I mean, you don't want to give away too much. You know, maybe they want to have, you know, Rude, you know, get his win back in some kind of convoluted, screwy fashion so they can have the rubber match on pay-per-view. I don't know, but it definitely does seem like a bizarre kind of turn of events in this case.
Yeah, I do wonder if the idea is to put the rubber match on pay-per-view or even to prove with this match that Aries can beat Rude and then have Rude beat Aries at the pay-per-view in a kind of convoluted way with the... most likely no disqualification stipulation worked in there. But I don't even want to spend too much time on this because it was odd and bizarre, but I think they'll get themselves back on track with whatever they're doing in the next couple weeks. I feel like this Rude and Aries angle, it's still got legs and it's still going to have some good things happen to it. So let's move on. Number two worst moment of the week. All of the freaking filler on the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Ryback. Divas, that tag team match, like just all of the unannounced filler on the show, and especially between Daniel Bryan and CM Punk and the Raw Money in the Bank ladder match, the Divas match, then the Ryback match, it was just a little much for me. It was a little too much filler and not enough good action.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've complained about this for quite some time, but, you know, it does feel like the further we get along here, the more WWE pay-per-view feels just like, you know, a 3-hour Raw without the commercial breaks. I mean, it doesn't really, I mean, and they even have commercial breaks on pay-per-view now, surprisingly. You know, they have different promo spots, but, you know, it's very difficult to discern, you know, between WWE pay-per-view and WWE television. You know, you might get some better matches on pay-per-view, but as far as from a presentation standpoint, there really isn't that much of a difference. I mean, it's kind of strange to me to sit down to watch a WWE pay-per-view and not have it seem like it has a big event feel. Like, yeah, you know, it seemed like maybe when I was a younger wrestling fan. So it makes it difficult to shell out the 50, 60 bucks when I know, you know, at least an hour or maybe more of a pay-per-view broadcast is going to be stuff, you know, that was just kind of crammed in to fill time because they didn't really have, have an entire 3-hour show booked. You know, I would be fine if they cut a pay-per-view down to 2 hours and trim the price 10 bucks. That wouldn't offend me in the least.
Yeah, that would be the in-your-house pay-per-views that they tried that with in the 90s. And even those soon expanded to 3 hours. I think WWE, and this comes from what we were talking about earlier with them just not telling stories in the mid-card. They're not really building up to pay-per-view feuds in the mid-card. They've got your main event stuff, maybe a couple more, and I think SummerSlam looks like an exception with how loaded that card looks. And even that, you know, part of the reason for that card looking so loaded is, well, you've got Triple H and Lesnar up top, and that I feel like that, you know, that's two guys who weren't there last month, aren't going to be there next month on the top of the show. And then as you work your way down, you get to the actual full-time guys. So it's a lot of filler. It's a lot of, like you said, it makes it difficult to shell out 50, 60 bucks to watch the show. In WWE, they're charging more than they ever have for pay-per-views right now. They need to be careful to make sure that they're delivering on that, because, you know, you watch a couple pay-per-views like that and you get a little soured on the product, and, you know, a lot of fans might start saying it's not really worth the cash anymore. I'm gonna save it, or, you know, WWE's real worst enemy, I'm going to go online and stream it, or I'm going to download it right after the event is over.
Yeah, you know, I thought this is what the WWE Network was supposed to accomplish. I mean, you know, that looks like, you know, vapor at this point. I mean, it's not even a real thing yet. Mm-hmm. And they don't have the distribution deals put together. They don't have content and all that stuff. But, I mean, if you could subscribe to the WWE Network for $10 or $15 a month, and, you know, you could watch whatever their original programming is, and if they moved a good portion of their pay-per-views, you know, aside from the big ones, you know, maybe 5 or 6 a year exclusively onto the WWE Network or something, you know, that would be value that they could offer people. But, I mean, when you're literally, you know, shoveling what you couldn't figure out to book onto the show, you know, they just shovel in this nonsense filler stuff onto pay-per-view. I mean, you're going to drive people away. But if you wouldn't probably be nearly as offended if it was a throwaway pay-per-view on the WWE Network that you just paid 15 bucks for, but you got an entire month's worth of programming on top of it. You know, they could do that kind of stuff. You know, it seems like they have all these, they have the NXT show, they have all these overseas commitments that they made with all this programming, they have all these original programming ideas in the works. I mean, if they could offer value with their television network, but as it sits now, I mean, it doesn't seem like their pay-per-view model, you know, is even worthwhile anymore. They're just driving people away with these lackluster, not necessarily lackluster shows, but, you know, it really is hard to justify 60 bucks for, I mean, 90 minutes of pay-per-view worthy wrestling.
Yeah, that's kind of the issue. At that point, you're paying like 20 bucks per half hour. And, you know, while that Punk versus Daniel Bryan match may have been, you know, worth 20 bucks to some people, I could get a lot of dinner with $20. And I like eating. That's something I'm a fan of. Let's move on now to the number one worst moment of the week, as I have rambled about dinner. Claire Lynch. Maybe we should just make this the Claire Lynch spot. And even when she's gone, consider it the Claire Lynch Memorial Award that we give out weekly. Claire Lynch is now smoking and accusing AJ Styles of being her baby daddy. Why?
I'm not sure. You know, I read AJ Styles. I'm not sure who he did the interview with. I'd have to look back on the site to see when it was published. But you know, he said in an interview basically that this story, you know, people didn't understand where it was going, and once they saw the long view of it, once they saw how it all plays out, it'll begin to make sense why they went about it the way they did. You know, and I keep waiting. You know. I really do. I mean, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt on this, but it just seems like it continually gets worse week after week. Like, I could not be any less interested in this feud, and you know, I'm sure something they'll do on Thursday will have me wondering, you know, if it's possible for me to be less interested. You know, I feel bad for Styles. I feel bad for Daniels. You know, they're both talented guys. Like, they showed at the Sacrifice pay-per-view, they can put on a really excellent wrestling match, but you know, this is basically the boat anchor of TNA at this point. It's dragging the whole show down.
Yeah, and that, I think that's a real bummer, is Styles and Daniels are guys who had a great match at the pay-per-view, but no one came out of that match going, I can't wait to see where their story goes next. Because the story is all about this girl, Claire, and, you know, it's drama that I don't think needs to be part of a wrestling show, but even if it is part of it, and I can accept it being a part of it, it's still not well done drama as part of that wrestling show, which is also an issue. The most I can say is hopefully it's over soon. You know, hopefully it's another month or maybe two, and maybe another great Styles Daniels match that surprises us, and then, hey, look, no more Claire Lynch, and she's off having her crack baby somewhere in an undisclosed location.
Yeah, I just wonder where the payoff for this is. I mean, obviously it's not going to end with Claire having a crack baby. I mean, it's they got to cut this short somehow, and, you know, I guess it really depends on if, you know, Claire was somebody that that Daniels had put up to it and scammed Dixie and AJ, you know, for him to get the dirt, or I don't know. I mean, there are soap opera-esque ways they can go about this, but none of it really amounts to entertaining television, and I hope whatever it is, it's over soon, because I'm way past tired of it at this point.
Yeah, that's basically it. I think that's going to wrap it up for the countdown this week. If you've enjoyed this show and want to hear Jake and I ramble about things on a weekly basis, check out the ProWrestling.net member site. Go to ProWrestling.net. There's a link on the right-hand side of the page where you can sign up. Check that out. Along with this show, you've got the .NET Weekly audio show, Jason Powell's Q&A, the new Quick Hits audio on occasion, and audio reviews of every show, plus bonus member exclusive interviews, ad-free access to the site, and all that other junk. So check that out. It's well worth your cash to look into ProWrestling.net. Jake, anything else to add before we sign off for today?
No, I think we covered it all, man.
Sweet. Have a good week, folks. Thanks for listening.